Le sprinkler.
Hi Eric.
Salut.
En français, pour, we started in French or in English?
Do you speak French?
Not at all.
Not at all. Oh, then we'll stick in English.
Yeah, we'll stick in English.
What other languages do you speak?
I can offer German, English, Dutch, and a little bit of Russian.
Wow. Okay.
English, so it is.
It's funny because you are our second guest who speaks Dutch.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Because Thomas Moreau, our previous guest, can also speak Dutch, and he even tried during our recording. So
I thought he had sneezed.
Probably sad.
Give or take. Hi Tom.
Hey.
Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be
here.
We
truly appreciate it. You had your conference yesterday, right?
Yes.
So there's zero stress right now.
No, today is just enjoying some talks, walking around, chasing a couple of follow-ups from yesterday, so overall quite good.
Yeah,
okay.
Nice.
Cool.
Really intrigued by your subject.
Ah, nice to hear.
From burn down to burnouts.
Yes.
What does that mean?
I'll just continue with the rest. Navigating the shift from agile metrics to employee wellness.
Yes.
Interesting.
Everything is interesting in this. I mean,
every word are interesting in that.
Did you use ChatGPT to generate this title?
No, not at all. But we are doing this talk now for quite a while. I think it's 1.5 years by now, roughly. And
okay. Yeah,
we have to admit we shaped it. We inspected, we adapted,
and
we also learned based on our feedback what to focus on. And that's where this title is coming from.
Okay.
And what was the title at first? Just for
Does everyone want to have a burnout? Didn't land well, so we had to adapt it a little bit.
Okay.
Probably was, don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
so what do you mean? What does it mean to be from burned down? I'm assuming you're referring to a burned down chart, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. From burned down to burnouts.
Yes. So the core idea is that we are combining on a little bit of research about the fact that the agile environment can not foster a burnout more than other environments, but there are certain links to it. So for example, we think in sprints, we want to focus on a 2-week time box. We want to get the stuff done we committed to and we give it back to the teams.
Mm-hmm.
But we sometimes forget to also create this safe space for the teams to actually think about their well-being. So it's, in a nutshell, a combination out of what does the agile world do to you, plus creating, let's say, burnout awareness, burnout prevention.
Yeah.
Because nowadays, it differs a little bit country by country, culture by culture. It's unfortunately mainstream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the point we try to make. So what we have is that, for example, 1 out of 5 people has either experienced a burnout.
What? 1 out of 5?
Yes. Has either experience or connection in a close social environment about the burnout.
Yeah.
And, well, that's a shitload.
And we are 3 years. So
yes,
almost one.
And even yesterday, we asked the audience who has that, and I think it was even more than 1 out of 5. I would say half of the room said they had people in their social environment or in their connections who had a burnout.
They raised their hands and
their hands. I mean, Sander and I, we also experienced that. So Sander went through a burnout. I got, like, say, extremely close to it, and that's why it's a topic by our hearts. And we thought, well, now we are at Agile conferences, how do we connect it? No, there's a serious reason behind it, that especially this sprint scrum behavior can foster burnout or can bring you into a position that you will experience a burnout.
Yeah, it is often perceived as a running sprint. Yeah,
even the term sprints.
Yeah, well, I mean, the term sprint was developed just to put into light the fact that the day you start, you see the end point. So
you know the distance.
So we don't get into that weird situation like when in university. You know, you have to deliver your project at the end of the semester. We got time.
Yes.
But when you have to deliver and you see the finish line, you organize yourself differently. Unfortunately, most developers overcommit.
Yeah, that's one
pretty
point.
Often. Mm.
And you also mentioned another really good point. You said, we have the end, we see the end, but a lot of organizations don't see it as an end because the first thing the organization is doing after finishing a sprint is planning the next one.
Yeah.
So there's no break, there's no time to breathe. And this vicious circle gets more intense, we overcommit, we experience more, we are chasing the perfect metrics. And that's also why we do the comparison to a burn down. The burnout is normally we start on day one, we finish 2 weeks later, and ideally the line goes down in a steady, continuous way. It looks wonderful.
Yeah.
That's what the management wants, but that's not day to day. That's not real life. So the people, We have bumps in it. We sometimes, no one is clicking the button in Jira. A lot of things come together. But what the management sees is we have the KPI. It needs to be a burnout. So we have the KPI, we have this and this velocity. And oh yeah, as you said, by the way, we overcommitted. Yeah, no one complains about overcommitment. Yeah. But that's the point. Why are we overcommitting?
It's
why
not overcommitment. It's a stretch goal. corporate speak.
Let's try it, just for fun.
Stretch goal.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Let's try it.
Yeah. Well, which goes against a basic principle of agility.
The sustainable pace. Forget it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful statement, but...
Yeah, and for us, it's, and this is also what we addressed during the talk, it's, yes, sustainable pace, but what is a healthy pace? So what is actually a pace which is accommodating the needs and the capabilities of the team and versus what the organization needs?
And each individual, too.
Yes.
My sustainable pace is not the same as his.
Yeah.
He has three young kids. I have a 25-year-old.
So maybe
your sustainable pace professionally or sustainable pace is very different in terms of delivery.
Yeah.
So you probably have to do twice as many hours total to deliver something as I do.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the good thing, he doesn't sleep anymore currently.
No, you don't need to sleep.
Yeah, I need to sleep.
Oh, yeah, okay. Sleep is overrated.
Yeah.
No.
It's a needed. Waste. It's a waste in lean. Waste number 19.
Sleeping.
Yeah.
Sleeping. After movement. Okay. So, but you mentioned something pretty interesting. You transformed a sustainable pace to an LT pace.
Yeah.
How can we find that pace war, LT instead of sustainable? How can we try to achieve it?
Yeah, I think a lot of things come together. First of all, the organization or the team needs to understand the KPI is not for the management, it's for them. So
it's
that they flip it, just flip it around, so this mindset shift. And then we talked about overcommitment and undercommitment, and to realize, okay, what is a pace we all feel comfortable, something we can deal with, something we can live with. And this needs to be figured out by the team, with the team. And if they then say, okay, we feel comfortable, no one is stressed, like, so NPS scores, is everyone healthy, how are we doing, using retrospectives, you figure out a pace where the whole team is comfortable with, which is steady, which is reliable. And this is, for example, which should be measured by the organization. Are we reliable? Is the weight of reliability high? Because no one will help you or tap you on the shoulder long term if you just deliver a shitload of features no one is using. Maybe someone is happy because it looks nice.
It looks great on
that
the metric
that side. Never happens, I'm sorry.
Or it happens every time.
And then if you flip it around, as soon as the team reaches this point, it comes to the solution, yeah, this is what we can achieve. Why should we overachieve? Because let's flip it around. If you have time to overachieve, invest the time in you as your team. So learning, sharing knowledge, cleaning up the mess a little bit, and this kind of stuff. But this also brings you to the question of what are our thresholds? So for example, how much new work do we have per sprint? How much bug work do we have per sprint? How much time for knowledge sharing do we have per sprint?
Yeah.
Because everyone is always just checking what makes the most money.
Yeah.
But money is not equalizing value always. Mm-hmm. So that's another question the team should ask. So a lot of self-reflection is needed. It's the same with your burnout, right? So I mean, I pivoted into it over a really long time. And I said, self-reflection was the key to getting out of it, because you stop, and you don't listen to anyone anymore. So I didn't listen to my girlfriend, I didn't listen to friends, because I didn't want to admit that I have an issue. It's the same with teams. They don't admit that they have an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Then they would not, they need to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to flash following an old podcast that we recorded a long time ago. We explored the concept of meta sprint goals.
Mm. Yeah.
Where we don't talk about the goal is to be able to pay by credit card. The goal is more
feature XYZ.
This sprint goal is
learning.
Let's learn something, or let's just be happy. I'm exaggerating, but just allow ourselves to be in a position of our sprint goal is to be relaxed at the end of the sprint, for example.
Yeah.
So once in a while, I've tried that in various teams. So, okay, guys, for this, you negotiated with the PO, you negotiated with the team, because the sprint goal is a collaborative effort between the team and the PO. I said, I'm noticing something, this and that.
Let's give
ourselves a meta sprint goal.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's no. Sometimes it's yeah. Let's do it. You know, and with varying results, obviously. Yeah. Human beings, you never know what you're gonna get. So yeah, that might be an interesting. I was with François Bourrega.
Yeah, I remember the podcast.
And that's a really good point, because if you think about this, meta sprint goals, it also creates a situation. Okay, what can I do? So what can I, in my situation as a developer, as a scrum master, as a PO, it doesn't matter which role, what can I do to prevent someone else pivoting into a burnout?
Yeah.
But also, how can I prevent myself to become one?
Okay.
And it starts with this self-reflection, being honest to yourself, communicate about it, be transparent, what is the problem? A lot of the agile values are coming up. Nevertheless, it is this openness and also this awareness that these things can happen. So this is why we are talking about it. Plus, COVID also brought us home for quite a while. So everyone was working remote. You probably know it. You watch at the camera. Half of the group doesn't have the camera on. And so you lose this social interaction. No coffee drinking, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And now we just converted into home office, working from home. Great. So we learned, well, working from home works. Let's reduce office spaces whatsoever, reduce social interactions. I mean, I'm a consultant. I'm talking the whole day. So sometimes I have 8 hours of talking, and the biggest interaction I'm having is with my coffee machine.
And your cat.
And if I would have one, yes. And that's not healthy. And this is why also having virtual coffee chats and also creating virtual spaces where you can just have a little bit of fun.
You have to create that space to have that kind of conversation, because if you don't explicitly do it, you just follow meetings after meetings just to
So I'll go at two levels. What are some of the key things I should be observing about myself to say, you know what, I might be flirting with a burnout right now? The follow-up question will be, obviously, how can I observe it with my teammates? What what are the key things that I could see to at least start a conversation?
I need to take care of Bob, because I think that he is flirting with the burnout.
Yeah, and then maybe it might just be having a coffee and getting the person to vent about something. I don't know. But what are the key tattletale behavior within myself that says, whoa, Eric, maybe you should do something?
Yeah. I mean, the indications can be different, but the things I always observe, which are good starting points to think about it, is, okay, can you by yourself check out of work? So if you go home, stop working, are you stop checking emails? Are you stop checking Slack? Are you actually checking out from work?
Come on, man, you're not fair.
Here it goes.
Crap, I'm having a burnout.
The other thing is then, especially if you observe colleagues, do they commit to too much work? So do you get the feeling, damn, how is he doing it or she doing it? So if you wonder how they can manage to achieve so much work, worth checking. Either they are crazy good in what they are doing, fair enough, points for them, or they just do it in the over hours, left and right.
Yeah.
I think that this is a good thing. And the other thing I experience with colleagues which are getting slowly into it is they're getting more unease. So normally a discussion wouldn't touch them that much, but then you see them acting out. They snap a little bit.
Yeah, more
they
impulsive.
They get a bit itchy in talks. And and that's always a good talk. So take him aside. Are you okay? Is everything fine? Because sometimes, and this is also what we're tackling in our talk, the burnout is not just coming from work. Also, your private life can burn you out. I mean, 3 kids.
Yeah.
Probably end of the food chain.
It's an intervention, right? It's not really a podcast right now.
Well,
you want to.
He's always the guinea pig, by the way, for all the experiments. So you have 3 kids. You have the condo stuff.
Yeah, I am implicated in
the school.
At the school of my kids.
Workout.
Partnership. I need to work out to enhance my health a bit.
Your wife injured herself.
And she's on strike right now.
Schools are on strike, and she's a teacher. Yeah.
So okay.
That could be good, though, actually.
So I take a break right now. Goodbye, guys.
No, but that's the point. It can come from different angles, and be aware of this, thinking about it. And that's why Sen and I, for example, I mean, we both experience it. So what we quite often do is once a week, twice a week, is, are you good? How are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Just a simple question asking, are we doing good? And yes, you need to have the psychological safety to share it with the person who's asking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a good thing as a CEO, go to your employee, say, are you actually good? Well, he will probably not answer in a proper way.
I'm fine, sir.
Yeah, but we're talking about a team, right? A trusted group, and they should be comfortable reaching out to each other and creating this. And it's the other thing, like we said, do a break after a sprint. Why not giving a team half a day to do whatever they like to do, and then go back into the planning. And not, by the way, we just planned. You have a 5-minute coffee break, and then we run further. Okay.
That's so, yeah. I remember one of my favorite teams I was in as a developer a long time ago, when we did the sprint review on a Friday morning. We did a retrospective more or less over lunch, and in the afternoon it was just technical debt and looking at stuff, maybe getting a sense of what's coming up next sprint, just
try to learn some things.
I don't want to say relax, because then this will be perceived negatively by upper management. It's more like at your own pace, ingest what's coming up in the future, what we left aside in the past, and just whatever happens at that point. Then we can start that sprint concept on the Monday morning.
Exactly.
That did. I remember. These are all brain cells firing up here.
And why do we forget that kind of experience? Why we don't just simply do it again and again?
Yeah, I guess if I was a developer, I would probably propose it in a retrospective or something. But as a coach, I want what they want. If you want to burn yourself out, okay, let's get there quicker.
How can I help?
How can I help you achieve that?
As fast as we can.
So obviously you know quite a bit about Scrum, by the sense of it. I'm a Scrum Master. How could I create a retrospective for that to be the central theme of the retrospective, and getting things out and coming up with some kind of action plan to address the team phenomenon?
Yeah.
Not just Bob being burned out, but the whole team is like, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's as simple as this. In a retrospective, don't call it a retrospective about stress. It will not work. But
nobody will show up. Nobody will show up.
Yeah. Or everyone will say, yeah, it's a retrospective about stress, so I'm stressed. No.
Let's talk about Gyro.
Yeah. Let's do a little spotlight at the beginning. How are you feeling? And that's on gathering an NPS score. The second step is, do you feel stressed? Just asking blindly the question, who feels stressed, on a scale from 1 to 5.
Mm.
And then, in addition, that's why we also call it Agile Metrics, are we tracking or measuring metrics which are freaking you out? So, for example, some people, and this is important to address in a retrospective, is they are stressed by velocity. Okay, 20 story points, la 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 la, this kind of stuff. Other people are stressed out by test needs to happen in 24 hours, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So reflecting as a team on that is really helpful, and also asking the question, do we have enough time to communicate, to interact? Because we all chase, as coaches for sure, I want to have that. I want to have as much time in the zone as possible. Yep. Yeah, but time in the zone means they are working hard on stuff we need to achieve, rather than let's have a coffee, let's have a chat over lunch. By the way, I found something. Can you help me with that? So creating space for that, this is important. And what I always try, not as a retrospective, but in every team, is that if it's a remote setting, remote co-working, which is a two-hour invite. Everyone who wants can dial in, but we are not talking. We're just working. Mm-hmm. And if you have a question, you just shout it into the room.
Yeah, you did that.
At the beginning of the pandemic, I called it the hublot, who means little windows.
Cubbyhole.
So I open it for a long period of time during the day. Yeah. And if you want to join it, feel free. If you want to talk with me, do it. Yeah. If you just want to work in parallel with me, do it too. Yeah. And that was pretty fun, but exhausting at the end.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe being on the cam for 3, 4, 5 hours a day.
Even if there's nobody there.
Yeah.
Create
some kind of
that's true,
mental fatigue. And
true.
Yeah, it was exhausting.
It's like a running thread.
Yeah, but pretty interesting at some point. Because
And I mean, also kids do it, right? They do co-gaming. So they play whatever online, and they are Discord and just have an open channel, and someone will say something or no one say something. And
Twitch.
Twitch. I'm too old for that. Yeah. but this kind of stuff.
I have kids.
I can't even spell it. So.
And then have the right balance. That's the key. That helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was Jürgen Appello that was talking about you left aside work-life balance. It was more work-life integration. So to basically some micro-balancing all the time between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's probably an overachiever too, so I don't know.
Yeah, I met him in Helsinki this year, for sure.
When's your next book, Jürgen?
No, you can't stop. And then, that's why we are talking about it. And I think overall the talk has a great, let's say, experience for us, because we learn a lot. We also do sharing in the session itself to make awareness and see how do you deal with it. Because for each and every person, for each and every team, it's slightly different. Mm. Nevertheless, what is so interesting to see, we are providing this talk here now in Canada, but we also did it in Helsinki. So for example, the awareness and the people who are raising the hand and sharing stories, Canada versus Finland is already a huge difference. We also did it in Switzerland. Well, you get totally different answers in Switzerland.
Really? Yeah,
can you give us some examples of the difference?
Yeah, I think, for example, here I had the feeling that the community was rather aware of the situation and rather aware that burnout is a thing. And more people honestly approached us to say, yeah, I will raise my hand if I feel burnt out, if I have an issue. So I'm feeling comfortable sharing this with my employer as well.
Okay.
While, for example, in Switzerland, it was, suck it up, buttercup. we need to do it, this kind of behavior. And I mean, there are even conferences where we pitched this this talk, and I think it just was not a cultural fit. For example, we went, or I went to a conference in India. I didn't talk about burnouts in India. Probably not
it's
the
not
right
even exist.
not the right market for that. The same with Azerbaijan. So we wanted to go to Azerbaijan, but there we also talked about the other talk we are having. There's always the next sprint. So it's also interesting to see which talks get selected where, which also tells a little bit about the awareness, the structure in the community.
Okay.
And I mean, we also have this study. So for example, the Western countries, if you will, they have a bigger awareness of it. But especially the countries which have a, let's say, stronger health system or more socialized health system, there's more awareness. Because in the States, well, also not an open book, that topic.
No, be a man.
Yeah, suck it up.
Yeah.
Again.
There's even something I think on, what is it called? Social media. What's it called?
Twitter.
X, not Twitter, but
Thread, Instagram.
Anyways, one of those.
Facebook.
That's what
TikTok.
That's the whole thing. You
Pinterest.
Know, be a man.
Yeah. the Andrew Tate's kind of.
Something like that. Yeah, it's like it's
toxic masculinity.
But on the silly, silly side of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you talked about it briefly, but I do need to bring it up. I need to bring up the C word, organizational culture. Not necessarily the geographical culture, but the organizational culture.
Yeah.
Like for example, I was coaching an organization, and one of the value for this new program, one of the values that they stated was agile. Failure is not an option.
It was the stated.
Clear. What a beautiful statement. What a way to generate instant
stress
and potential burnout.
Yeah.
Because and I was arguing this, I said failure will happen anyways. Whether you state or not, it will happen. The only difference is that they're not going to be transparent about it, and we'll be doing the same failure over and over again.
Do you want to
know? Do you want to keep it? Yes or no? I was pissed.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't rarely get pissed as a coach, but I was not happy about that. But that aside, how do you, as a coach, how do you deal with organizational culture in regards to the expected behavior and observe burnout symptoms within different teams?
Yeah. And here now comes the coaching answer. It depends.
Here's your check.
Because you really need to check, how open is the organization or the organizational culture to think about or to talk about that? Mm. The good thing is that nowadays you have actual hard facts you can leverage. So, for example, there are studies which are indicating the average costs of a burnout for an employer is something around $100,000/euro, Canadian dollars might be different, but it's a shitload of
that
money.
Range. Mm.
So if you're losing 1, 2, 3 employees, that's a shitload of money you are losing. And the leadership tends to listen to money. So money is a fair point. So they have issues with that.
Yeah.
So you can address that. But it's also interesting to see as a coach that you have both sides of the scale. For example, you have classical organizations which are fostering burnout due to typical chain of command things. They push problems down. They just force the workforce to work.
Yeah.
But you also have this fancy new work organizations like TikTok, Meta, Google, whatever. Yeah. And I don't know if you know the movie The Circle from Emma Watson. They just pit in the other direction. Yeah. So much engagement, so much, we are cool, I want this, that they also pitch people into burnouts and they don't even recognize it.
Yeah.
They said, well, I have a pool, I have a cinema, they can live here, great, but they're working 24/7 now, also not good. And it's important to figure out where are you and how to address the team. So, for example,
there's a lot of burnouts when organizations try to shift from the traditional to something more open. Yeah. I used to be only accountable. Now they expect me to be responsible for something.
Yes.
Oh, man. I don't want to be responsible. Yeah. I just want to follow the process that somebody told me to follow. I don't want to challenge the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of burnout regarding that, too.
Yes, true. Yeah. True. And this is why it normally starts with just this happiness score, NPS, how is the team doing? And then can you create a safe space? So can you create a psychological safety on team level? Mm. This is normally a great start. And then working out of that, also addressing the leadership in a certain way, that you have certain experience, that the team shows certain symptoms, and then take it from there. But it can be a really long and tough road to actually create awareness and acceptance for that.
So changing the culture is not an option.
It's not a necessity, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Changing the culture can help, but sometimes the culture is right. It's just the way the people perceive the culture and actually live the culture that can be an issue.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you
have a value, failure is not an option or a statement. that might be an indicator, and you should change that. But on the other hand, we at Sabia, for example, we have people first, customer intimacy, sharing knowledge, and quality without compromise. So okay, people first, all good. Yeah, well, let's assure that our people are happy. Yes, checkbox. Sharing knowledge, also easy, we talk with each other. Good. But then we have quality without compromise.
Oh.
Creates a little of a push. Yeah. So quality always 9 out of 10. Oof, I want to sleep sometimes. And on the other side, customer intimacy,
what is that?
We always say, okay, if we cannot, let's say, push the bar a little bit higher than the client actually wants, we're not doing a good job.
The old rule in Scrum. Just give them a little more than what they expect. Yeah, they took that out a while back. Yeah.
And then we have customer intimacy, which indicates we should be intimate and talk about things with our customer. But admitting that our customer is pushing
a little bit more
the gas too hard, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because you need to let your client know, by the way, you want to go faster than we can. Oh, quality without compromise. You said you will deliver. That's hard to do sometimes.
Yeah.
But then, and this is why the values then kick in, people first, is everyone happy? Is everyone doing good? So for example, we also have health coaches we can reach out to 6 times a year and all these kind of stuff. Mm. So we don't need a big cultural change. I have seen organizations which definitely needed a cultural change.
Is it even possible? But that's another podcast.
It's possible over a really long time. Yeah. I think, for example, if you watch the whole Microsoft journey over the last 6 to 10 years,
they really
really pivoted the culture.
Oh, yeah, true.
But it took a really, really long time. And I think the
Bill Gates years where you used to check who's in the parking lot, that changed. I'm assuming it changed.
It changed. Yeah. And on the flip side, and this is what some people don't see, is they invested heavily in it.
Yeah.
So much money, so much effort went in it to actually change that culture. It's a really long way. And this is also what I think big corporates sometimes underestimate how much it will take to do that. Because it's not just, by the way, we have a new slogan, just follow the slogan.
Don't get me started, man.
It's written on the wall, check.
Oh, yeah. The paper's all yellow from the years of Inspire posters, I call them.
Oh, new stickers, guerrilla marketing. Put a sticker on your laptop, it would help.
Yeah, or the running screensaver that they update through the central system there.
Or the background in our teams. Yeah. When
you are happy. Fuck you. Be happiest.
Yeah. But culture plays a really big role in it, for sure.
Yeah.
But you also have the subculture in the team. So how do I deal with that? Did I accept that? Or I had a team a while ago, really seasoned team, really mature, but I think we had 7 people and 6 of them were with the company forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't change them. That's like you don't replace an old tree. That's they do the way they do it and that's it.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And the 2 new guys then, but I want it. No, okay.
No. Yeah, they become pickles very quickly. They don't stay cucumbers.
Yeah. We reach our time box.
Oh yes.
Sorry.
Oh boy, we rarely push time boxes, but now we have to.
We have spaces limitation as we talked
exactly.
a little bit earlier.
Tom, thanks so much for having the conversation with us.
Really
we
inspiring.
Truly appreciate it.
Happy to.
And if people want to reach you.
How can they do?
Yeah.
LinkedIn. Just
LinkedIn.
Drop me a message on LinkedIn. Always open for chat.
Good. All right.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.